Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. When thinking about health, we understandably spend considerable time thinking about nutrition. The foods we choose to eat have a major impact on our overall wellness and drastically affect our health and longevity. But as my guest today explains, nutrition involves not only our food and beverage choices, it should also include a diet of movement. That's right, movement. As Americans are saturated with quick and easy calories, making the healthier choice often the more difficult one, so too have we become a sedentary culture that lacks enough movement to keep ourselves feeling healthy. Lack of movement in our daily lives leads to muscle atrophy, stiffness, and imbalances that can have a profound long-term effect on our wellness. My guest today, Katie Bowman, is a biomechanist and author, as well as an evangelist for getting us all out of our static patterns of sitting and limited movement. Bowman is the founder of NutritiousMovement.com, a website and practice where she posits that movement is a solution for many of the ailments modern Americans suffer from. Her newest book is called Grow Wild, The Whole Child, Whole Family, Nature-Rich Guide to Moving More. Bowman fears that the current generation of so-called digital natives might also be considered movement aliens. In the book, she connects the dots not only between sedentarism and our health, but also as it affects the health of the planet. And she offers over 100 ways for families to move more, together, in cooperation with nature. Katie Bowman, biomechanist and author of Grow Wild, The Whole Child, Whole Family, Nature-Rich Guide to Moving More, is my guest today on Studio Tulsa, Medical Monday. Katie Bowman, welcome to Medical Monday. Let's start by just having you define what a biomechanist is. You are a biomechanist. What does that mean exactly, and how did you become one?
Biomechanics is a field of science that blends biology, that's the bio, and Newtonian physics, which is the mechanics. So it's really specifically things like how lever systems work, pressures, frictions, you know, the real general type stuff. And biomechanists do all sorts of things. There are biomechanists, and not all biomechanists study human motion. Anything living has biomechanical laws that apply to it. So there are tree biomechanists and there are animal biomechanists. And then where I work, which is in human biomechanics, biomechanists will do things like create orthopedic devices, analyze gait. They'll work with athletes in terms of maximizing performance. Like there's a lot of biomechanics that goes into golfing. Biomechanists design shoes. So big shoe companies will often employ biomechanists to understand how gait might affect shoes. And then we can work with physical therapy departments to create equipment or even movement programs that target specific outcomes. So that would be figuring out what's the best therapeutic intervention that you would want to create for a particular injury or whatnot. So how I got into that is, you know, I was very much interested in physics and math at university, and I was not a mover, but at that same time, I became someone who went from being pretty sedentary and studious, not very active, to someone who became quite active and really began to see the benefits personally in my own body with movement. So I studied fitness at the same time that I was studying the science of movement and the levers. And then I spent a little bit of time working with the general population just in gyms. A lot of times if you want to start getting healthy, you go to a gym and they'll give you a trainer. But because I was a degreed trainer, someone who had studied movement more extensively, I started to get everyone who was needing extra assistance, not general fitness, who needed better instruction when it came to dealing with old musculoskeletal injuries. You learn more about the loads that you can give hearts after maybe they have gone through cardiac rehab, but you need some steps to be able to go into general fitness. And then I went back to graduate school to study biomechanics more in depth because I became very curious about the relationship between the diseases that we experience and how movement affects those. So I think with health, we tend to think of biochemistry, but the physics, the way our cells and our body is loaded, is also working lockstep with the biochemistry. And so I just focused on that. And then of course it's been 20 years. So I've just worked with a lot of different bodies and spent a lot of time working with individuals to see why the way they were moving was relating to the physical experience that they were having.
So how does biomechanics differ, say, than kinesiology, which is something I hear a lot of folks kind of in our local area either study or major in? Because I think of that as sort of the science of movement, maybe with less physics, perhaps, or...
Well, yeah, kinesiology is an interesting field. So biomechanics is often under the umbrella of kinesiology. So kinesiology is the study of human movement, and it's the department that I was in as well. But there are subcategories of kinesiology. So there's exercise physiology, biomechanics, athletic training, sports psychology, and pedagogy. So pedagogy would be teachers, you know, how do we take movement and bring it to schools? That would be pedagogy. Sports psychology, I think, is pretty self-evident. It's just how the mind works when it comes to performance, and you can use your mind to enhance your performance. Biomechanics, like I said, are those physical forces, and exercise physiology would be where people who end up becoming exercise physiologists come through. They're really understanding the physiological mechanisms of energy pathways. So because human movement is so broad, it really has all these subcategories. So biomechanics is just a very specialized section. And I think as you're studying kinesiology, you maybe take sort of a general class in each, but I specialized in biomechanics for both undergrad and graduate school because it's really its own field, but just because of how universities are set up, it falls under that umbrella of an element of the study of human movement.
So I want for our listeners, I want you to describe what your home is like. And I guess tell us who lives there and how it might be different from the, say, quote unquote, average house.
Well, we have a family of four, if you don't count dogs, sheep, and chickens, which are sometimes in the house, strangely enough, although they shouldn't be. I have two children who are 9 and 10. And I think that probably what you're getting at is my house is different from most houses because we have set up our house to facilitate less sitting time, less sitting in a chair time specifically. So we have no traditional seats as you would understand them. We have cushions for the floor and we have exercise balls that sit out. We do have some bench seating for those friends and family who come over who aren't as mobile, who need a little bit of support. Our kitchen table and really all the tables in our house have been lowered so that we can sit on the floor using different body shapes as we eat or read or do art. I have a standing workstation, and I also have a low workstation, one that's much like our dining room table. So I can sit with my legs crossed or my legs stretched out to the front. And so these are choices that we've made. They would be most like how you would set up your kitchen for better eating. You know, you would fill the cupboards with better ingredients or simply more of the food that you want to be eating when you're pursuing healthy eating. So we got rid of the super cushiony couch. We got rid of the chairs that had our hips and knees in the same 90-degree position that we are having a hard time getting away from. So that's probably what's most radical about my house. And we've got some things to hang on too. And that's also new. You can do some pull-ups. We have an aerial silk that hangs from a beam. I have a pull-up bar over in my sewing section of my house. So it just sets up and encourages quite a bit of movement throughout the day.
We're talking today with Katie Bowman, who is the author of a new book called Grow Wild, The Whole Child, Whole Family, Nature-Rich Guide to Moving More. And it's a beautiful book loaded with pictures that I should point out are not stock photos. These are actual pictures either of you and your family or your, I guess, neighbors and community, but also photos that I think readers or clients have sent in of their own families. So these are real people doing real things that you or I could do, our listeners. Katie Bowman, you describe a problem that we have in modern times called sedentarism. Can you tell us what that is and why you think it's worsening?
I like to break up sedentarism into two categories because Yes, we are. Our levels of general physical activity, that's just how much you're moving around, how much you use your musculoskeletal system to move you around throughout the day, is declining. So, and this is a global problem. This is not just a problem in the United States. So we've got that phenomenon, but also there's a second piece to parse out, which is not only are we not active a lot of the time, when we're not active, we tend to adopt a single position to take in that inactivity. So that was that sitting posture that I was talking about before. This knees and hips at 90 degrees, spine slightly flexed forward, looking at a computer or a tablet or a phone in your hands. So if you can kind of imagine your body in this shape, what we're doing is we're taking in a lot of time in a particular shape. So I bring that up because a lot of the solutions that I offer are not necessarily solutions that increase our physical activity in the sense of moving our bodies from point A to point B more. It's oftentimes continuing to remain, you know, remain in place. So that would be, okay, I have to go to the office every day. How can I not be sitting in a chair with my body in this position? It's like, okay, well, you can take your stillness in a different shape, and then you are actually moving more. You are using your joints, you are using your skeleton in a different way, you are organizing your venous arterial system in a different way, and all of these matter on a smaller scale, on the cellular level. And so this is a problem because the effect of movement is really bound up with our physiology. We don't think of our physiology as living within a body. We sort of take it out of the body and study it, looking at a book, but it's subject to the shapes and the pressures that it is within, and it's in a very sedentary container. So we sort of understand food a little bit more than we understand movement. And so we understand that there's nutrients that we need that come from food, but there are similarly nutrients that come from moving your body, because when you move your body, you're changing the shape of your cells, and that change in shape of the cells becomes biochemistry on the cellular level. And when we're missing not only moving around our whole person a lot, that physical activity, but we're also missing bending all of the levers within our body. We're not really toggling all of the joints that we have through their ranges of motion. There's not only an atrophy in the sense of the musculature and the bones of those systems, there's a loss to the support that that movement offered our physiology. And then, of course, there's the subsequent loss of skill, the fact that we just stop being able to do certain things that we used to be able to do. And we're used to calling those things simply the effects of aging, but you could also call them the accumulation of sedentarism over time. So we're sort of witnessing how a sedentary population ages out versus how human bodies age out. There's definitely a difference between those two situations.
Okay, and you give an example that's actually not so much about aging, really, but is more about children. And I would say this book is very family focused, and the photos of the kids and all of the activities that you mention with kids and your family in particular are quite wonderful. I mean, it was really breathtaking to behold. But you give this example of fidget spinners, which was, I guess, a big fad starting in 2017. And they're sort of still a fad for some folks. Can you tell us what fidget spinners are for those in our audience that don't know, and why you thought they were such a phenomenon?
Well, so fidget spinners were these toys, I guess we'll call them toys, like the size of a deck of cards, and you could balance it on your finger and then you could get it spinning with the other finger. And so there was this element of being able to hold it in your hand and get it to move very quickly, and you could move your hand around and try to not have it fall off. And one of the reasons I think these were so popular is because, well, one, children have a tremendous need to move. You know, they're born, and when our adult bodies are essentially shaped during our juvenile period, you're setting up bone shape and you're setting up a bone density, you know, that's going to go forward into your adult years. You're setting up a lot of potential here. And so we come with sort of a baseline of required movement that we're not being, that children are able to get right now. And so if you have this hardware and software that's meant to be moving, but it's growing up in a sedentary container, then anything that requires some sort of constant movement and physical skill to negotiate is a nutrient of sorts, right? It's in the same way, if we have a dietary nutrient, you have to eat, but you can quench your hunger by eating something that's not particularly nutritious. So our signals for nutrition aren't that sophisticated. It's just general hunger, but I can eat a candy bar and stop being hungry. Doesn't mean that it nourished me any more than perhaps the calories. So a fidget spinner in that same way is a way to quench the movement signal. But as I expanded upon in the book, there's a lot of things that we can do that quench that signal that also pay off beyond simply the movement. So I offer a lot of hand-based activities that, you know, children have done for a very long time up until right now. They've gotten pretty small, because there's something going on with our hands, human hands, and the way that we're using them now that is resulting in a decline of grip strength, where 20-year-olds now are not as strong as 20-year-olds from 20 years ago. And the researchers looking at that data suspect that it has a lot to do with the types of things we do with our hands now. So fidget spinners and swiping and typing, they are all things that move the hands, but they're not necessarily strength building. You know, kids aren't climbing trees as much as they were before. We're not going across the monkey bars. We're not really spending a lot of time in these outdoor playful scenarios like we used to, because in addition to being less physically active, we're also inside more. We're just inside and sitting and taking in more screen-based activities. So of course there's going to be a loss of not only total movement, but specifically movement of the hands. And humans are hand users. I mean, that's one of the places we see a lot of our creativity emerge.
And Katie, you comment really, it's sort of, there's a bit of cultural commentary about things you call containers, and you define various containers as our clothes, our homes, even like how we think about nutrition. And you have some really interesting ideas for how to essentially move more in all of these containers and all of these spaces. And one thing culturally that you point out that maybe isn't a surprise until you look at some of the photographs or indeed think about it is there are all kinds of cultural barriers and parameters and bans really on movement. We tell kids to, you know, stop fidgeting. I'm talking about those fidget spinners. We tell people, don't walk here, don't go there. There are basically all kinds of rules that ban movement, particularly aimed at kids who, as you point out, have a lot of energy and have a physical need to move. So you have, for example, a picture of an airport, I think it's in Amsterdam, where the engineers or designers or architects there built a slide at the airport. And I think you even comment in the caption that you went down the slide at least once, but I guess I don't know if your kids were there or not, but that kids seem to really enjoy that. And so that's something that's sort of in the built environment that is particularly useful to moving. But I guess I wanted to ask you here about this concept you write about in the book called stacking. And if you could just share with our listeners what you mean by stacking, that would be great.
Well, I think if you ask most people why they don't move more in the most general sense, it has to do with time. We're having a hard time finding the time to move. So movement throughout the human timeline has always been a necessity to get the things that you need. So as we have been living in a technologically progressive society, a lot of those progresses made come with some loss of movement associated with them. So I'm a biomechanist. My bias is always going to be to assess things by the movement that they require or don't require. So I tend to see things a little bit differently because I'm seeing what's the human body's physical experience with this technology and how much it's moving in order to operate it. So I came up with this concept of stacking to address the problem of time, because now your whole day is filled with not moving. So if the human body requires a significant amount of movement throughout the day, but our built environment, and I would say that our culture has a built environment that includes rules. So some of it's visible and some of our environment is invisible. They're sort of the implied behaviors that you feel pressure to or that you have to adhere to. There is no more time for movement. If I can get my shelter and I can do my relationships and I can get my meals and there's no movement required for them, then I'm not going to find the container of time necessary to be able to move. So stacking is this way of approaching how you are meeting your current needs. And so I outline our basic needs that we all share at the beginning of Grow Wild. You know, we have to work, children have to go to school, which is their work. You know, they have to be educated. We have to eat, we have relationships to manage, we have to sleep, and we have to move. These are all biological necessities. And so stacking is to look at your needs and to look at the tasks you do on a daily basis. So if you wrote out everything that you did in a day, you're going to find that it's, you know, you're making a couple of meals, you're driving to and from the grocery store to get those meals. We have transportation needs. You have to go to work. And so you're making choices every day about the tasks that you use to meet your needs. So stacking is, can you change a task so that it meets multiple needs at once? So if you have to go to work, for example, and you also have to move, maybe you could walk all or part way to work or to school or even to the grocery store. It doesn't really matter. Because now you are not only getting that physical activity that you need, you're also getting something else done that you need. And this is a different approach than getting your physical activity in isolation. Like I have to go run for 45 minutes or I have to go ride my bike for a half an hour. Because when we approach movement in this way as exercise, then the only thing we're getting done during that period of time is the movement itself. And so we have so many important things to do throughout the day. Exercise is constantly reduced to a not as important, not as critical, right? Because us not doing it, the consequences of not doing it come so far down the line from us not doing it that we don't necessarily ever increase it in priority. So stacking is just, how can I add movement to all of the other areas of my life that have become movement free?
I want to finish by asking you about a company you started that is your movement education company with a great name. It's called Nutritious Movement. And I guess, what is that and how did you come up with the name?
I use Nutritious Movement to capitalize on the framework that a lot of folks already understand about food. We know that there are macronutrients, categories of food that we have to get, fat, protein, and carbohydrate. But then we also recognize that it's not enough to really even eat just from those three categories. There's also the concept of micronutrients, which means you have to pick a diet that meets all of your needs, or else, I don't know if many people are aware that what deems a chemical compound to be a nutrient is that there are predictable symptoms in its absence, and that those symptoms go away once you reintroduce the chemical compound back in. That's how nutrients, dietary nutrients, are identified, and sunlight too. So it's not only dietary. So it's not just enough to eat. We have to sort of drill our diet down to make sure we're getting this spectrum from what we eat. And so movement is the same way. Right now, we are in such a movement drought for many people that the idea of just get moving, right? Just get out of movement starvation is where we are often starting. But there's one of the reasons a lot of people don't move is because they have been not moving for so long that moving hurts. And so even this general concept of get yourself moving is unattainable if you can't bear weight on your foot or your knee or your hip or your spine or something, other musculoskeletal issues. And so that's where I am trying to use the framework to say, you don't only need to move your entire body, each of your parts needs movement too. And so you can approach your movement diet by focusing on these undermoved areas within your body. And they can be, you can have undermoved areas within very active bodies. So a lot of athletes will come to me who still are experiencing issues. Or if you go to a physical therapist, what they're doing is helping you find a sedentary area within your body that may or may not also be active as a whole body. So it's this idea of there are macronutrients to movement. Fat would be like cardio, strength training, and flexibility. But there are also micronutrients to movement, which mean the musculoskeleton of your feet need particular movements, and those are different from the movements that your shoulder needs, which are different from the motions that your low back might need, that you actually have this whole spectrum of movement that you need. And I also choose nutritious movement because a lot of my work is geared at getting movement to be recognized as an actual nutrient. It meets those same definitions through a process of mechanotransduction. When you move your body, you're moving the cells within your body, and those cells then create a biochemistry. So we can't eat movement, but we put movement into our body just like we put food and sunlight. And so if we can understand that it is something essential, where there are predictable symptoms that arise when your whole body is physically inactive, and those symptoms would be more on the metabolic level, or when there are specific movement nutrients missing, there are very predictable symptoms that arise, you know, in particular joints. And it's through that framework that, again, a physiotherapist will give you really specific motions to round out your movement diet so that your shoulder becomes more stable, or so that your knee is in rehabbed because the muscle forces are better balanced in that area. So that's why nutritious movement is nutritious movement. And we like to help people on both the whole person moving from point A to point B level, as well as helping them move their individual parts.
Okay, well, the name of the book is Grow Wild, The Whole Child, Whole Family, Nature-Rich Guide to Moving More. And it's written by my guest today, Katie Bowman, who's a biomechanist. She also runs the education company and website nutritiousmovement.com. Katie Bowman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Katie Bowman is an expert in biomechanics based in Washington State. Her new book is called Grow Wild, The Whole Child, Whole Family, Nature-Rich Guide to Moving More. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening, and please stay safe out there.